There are a few things more satisfying than eating healthy food that comes right out of your own garden, but there's also a very special relationship between local farmers and the people who benefit from their labor. It's really a connection, I think, that helps everybody. And today we're going to talk with someone who is making a very good living and a very good life on a micro farm in Canada. And we can all learn, I think, a lot from his example. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today for another edition of Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. My guest today, Jean-Martin Fortier, a farmer, a writer, educator, specializes in organic and biologically intensive cropping practices. They're really passionate about demonstrating how small farms can play a very important role in the rebuild of our food system, and is the author of the book I have in front of me. It's titled The Market Gardener, A Successful Grower's Handbook for Small-Scale Organic Farming. Jean-Martin, welcome to Garden Talk. Thank you so much for taking time to be with us today.
Well, Larry, thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
Well, it's wonderful. And I want to jump right in. And then maybe we can go back to fill in details. But you're making a very good living on a 1.5-acre organic farm in a northern climate and without a tractor.
Yeah, that's the part that nobody really believes. But yeah, our micro farm is about the size of a soccer field. And basically, it's 180 permanent raised beds, all 100 feet long. And they're cultivated with from 40 to 50 different vegetables that we sell directly at the farmer's market and through our 140-member CSA.
And it's profitable.
Yeah, we've started the farm in 2004, and, the sales last year were $150,000 produced on vegetables produced on site, and the profit margins of our farm ever since we've started the farm was around 45%. And so these are all numbers that people perhaps won't really understand, but the bottom line here is that we're producing a lot of vegetables for families that we're feeding directly, and, our expenditures are about half of the sales, so more than half of it comes back to our salary, to my wife and I.
Yeah, and it's really wonderful. And you really want to encourage others who might have thought about farming but never imagined that they could not only survive but thrive.
Yeah, I think, from experience I knew, because I've been around young farmers. I'm still a young farmer myself. I'm going to turn 37 tomorrow, but I've started when I was 22, and when we started farming, I knew nothing about farming. I didn't grow up on a farm, but I was passionate about ecology and social activism. And I really wanted to make a difference. I really want to get involved into something that was hands-on and that was making a difference. And we started to WOOF, which is, to do volunteering on a small organic farm in New Mexico. And that just opened my universe and my heart to this idea of small-scale farms producing food locally for their community. And that really got me inspired, and then I got into it myself, started to farm, started to grow, and I took 10 years of my life to really figure that how that could be done, and we did that, and it worked. And when my book came out, it was about sharing not just a successful story to inspire others that this is possible, but to really teach people that if you want to be doing this, you can't improvise. You need to learn the techniques. You need to understand which tools and farm, in a more professional manner, which is what really I'm about.
Well, I really am enjoying your book. It's not only does it include, give us the kind of details, the detail that we need, but you write in a very engaging way. And so it's fun to read and learn at the same time. It's really a fascinating book.
Yeah, well, well, thank you for the compliment, and I appreciate it, because it was a lot of effort to write it, but I was highly motivated by the fact that there's a lot of young and not so young people that would like to start farming, And they're always turned off by the fact that the models that they see in front of them are bigger farms that are, you know, mechanized and that have, you know, two or three or four tractors, warehouses, and, you know, 10 to 15 working crews. And they look at that and they're like, well, if I want to get there, this looks like far away. I need so much capital, and this is going to take so much out of me that can I really do it? And what we're proposing is that you can start small. You can do a 30-member CSA. You can farm with hand tools. And by using these, you know, techniques, we're talking about biointensives and whatever, you can really make it happen for yourself and develop your skill set as you develop your client base and as you, you know, acquire these tools moving forward. And that really, I think, is key, because I know that the small farm dream is in a lot of people's heart. And honestly, if we look at this at a micro scale, which I'm not, you know, this is not my job to do, but, you know, our world needs more farmers. And I think I'm committed to that.
Well, you sure are. And this certainly, excuse me, your book certainly is an example of your commitment. You talked about hand tools a lot. I was fascinated with your tools, because I mean I know some of those tools, and I've gardened myself for many years. But I was thinking, God, that fork, for example,
the broad fork.
I've got to tell you, I've never seen one.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the name of my farm in French, La Grelinette. That's the broad fork is a French tool that was invented in the 60s by this man, André Grelin. And the broad fork, what it is, it's a big fork. It's about 27 inch wide with tines that are about 10 to 12 inch long. And you just plant it in the soil, ideally in your permanent beds. And just by the action of leverage, you loosen up the soil, but without turning it. And you don't want to be turning your soil, because you want to keep the integrity of your structure, and you don't want to be bringing up weed seeds from the bottom up. So this tool is really designed for deep tillage, but in a very gentle way. And we thought it was, you know, very symbolic of what ecological farming is, and that's why we call their farm, you know, the Broad Fork Farm, you call it.
And, you know, without a tractor, I mean, you have, in a way, a mini tractor.
A walking tractor
is, and really that makes all the sense in the world if you're trying to garden, or I should say market garden, in a small area.
Yeah, and that was really the constraint that we had, because when we bought our farm, it was a 2-acre prairie, and our goal back then was to make two salaries. And for us, both my wife and I, to be farming full-time on that 2 acres. So we really needed to manage it well to not lose any space at all. We wanted to have every square foot of the farm be productive. And so if you bring a tractor into such a setup, it's just a tractor eats up so much space just to turn at the end of the row, you know? So we thought, if we could do without, and then this idea of permanent beds.
Yeah.
It really boils to that, because, you know, tractors were invented and are quite useful if you're plowing, if you're disking, if you're, you know, shaping beds or moving dirt around. But if you're working in a permanent bed system, you know, I've raised my bed 10 years ago, like 12 years ago, and we haven't moved the beds around ever since. So we really didn't need a tractor for that either. So a walking tractor or a two-wheel tractor, however you want to call it, just made a lot more sense. And we've been farming with these tools ever since.
I want to give our listeners a chance to join in our conversation as we talk with Jean-Martin Fortier about market. His book is titled The Market Gardener, A Successful Grower's Handbook for Small-Scale Organic Farming. Have you thought about that? I know we've had many calls on Garden Talk over the last few years from people who would really like to get into farming, but, you know, thought they could never get into it. Well, Jean-Martin really wants to encourage you, so I hope you'll call in with your questions. I know he's happy to help. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. Go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. You can post your questions or your comments there. Please do call in with your questions. I know he's happy to help you out in any way that he can. And you think, I wonder, let's see, let me put it a different way here. How successful has it been, the book been, for some people? And of course, it's not that old a book, but...
It came out a year ago in English.
Yeah, and so have you got some people who are followers?
Yeah, and you know what? You know, Larry, who Elliot Coleman is.
Yes.
And we're pretty much following in his footsteps.
Yeah.
When I started farming, the book I was reading was The New Organic Grower.
Yeah.
And it was talking about farming with hand tools and using a walking tractor and these 30-inch bed systems. And so, you know, that's what I wanted to mimic and replicate and go from. And that's really what we've done for many, many years. And, you know, I really strongly feel that people will pick up The Market Gardener and they'll understand what I'm talking about and what we've come up with. And then they'll bring this to a whole other level because, you know, there's a lot. And I meet them because I go around and I give presentations and workshops about how, you know, how to work this technically. And I meet these young growers and not so young growers because there's people in their 40s and 50s that they want to have a second career. You know, they're tired of computer screens. And it's happening. And I think that in 10 years we'll have this discussion again, if you want, and the book and these techniques, which aren't mine, you know, we've just kind of picked up on somebody else's work and we've kind of put all my ideas in a blender and came up with something a bit different, but it's helping people start their own farm and it's helping them understand that if you want to be doing this, you need to be fully committed and serious and professional about it. And that's really, I think, what's new in this book. And that's what I hear from people that have read it and that are thanking me about it. It's like, whoa, I've been gardening for 40 years, or I've been farming for 30 years, and, you know, we knew all of this made sense, but we just never knew anybody who was really doing it.
Yeah.
And then there you then JM comes, and he's proving that it works. And these ideas are not foolish, you know. Farming small acreage can be profitable. As long as you have the right, you know, the right stuff to do it.
Yeah, the right land, the right equipment, and certainly the right knowledge. That's the key.
Yeah, and you know, I'm talking about this, and you know, this is not pie in the sky. Like, I'm not just like creating this dream for people. This is, you know, if you read the book, this is highly technical stuff, and this is like we're serious about, you know, talking about farming, but in a way where, you know, we're food producers, and you know the rest comes because, you know, it's a dream that we have. But we're like a baker. You know, you can't improvise to be a baker. You need to learn how to bake, and you need to understand the chain of production in a bakery if you're going to be producing bread efficiently. And it's really the same thing with the market gardening thing. And
you know, I was raised on a farm, and of course I've been gardening for pretty much my whole life. But as I read your book and thinking, putting myself in the position of starting a market garden, for example, and I'm just thinking to myself, man, I never would have thought of that if I hadn't read this book. And there were a whole bunch of aha moments like that for me in the book. So I can see where the person who is really interested in getting into it, this is something that you definitely want to take a look at for sure.
Did you have a ha-ha moment when I was describing how we were using tarps to smooth out the soil and to, you know...
That was a great suggestion. That's a great idea.
It's so simple, and for us, when we came across that, it just changed our whole farming system because we're laying out these UV-treated silage tarps on our permanent beds, and we're leaving them for 2 or 3 weeks. And what these tarps, they do is that by covering the soil, and the fact that they're plastic tarps, so they retain the moisture that wants to come up, and the plastic kind of traps it there. So it's moist, it's dark, because these are dark black tarps, and it's warmer. So, you know, these are perfect germinating conditions for the dormant weed seeds that are in your soil. And so these weed seeds, they germinate. And then what happens is that after a week or two, they die because they don't have any light.
Yeah.
So you're putting these tarps down, and you're weeding your garden of dormant weed seeds. And then that really got us excited. So we were buying big tarps to cover whole field blocks. And then one thing leading to the other, we would remove these tarps, and then, man, our beds were ready to go. We didn't need to till because it was all clean, and so we started really to farm with these tarps and use, you know, a minimal amount of fossil fuel to really get our things going.
Talking today with Jean-Martin Fortier about gardening, market gardening, and his book, The Market Gardener. And I'm really glad to have you listening in today. You're going to learn a whole lot. I've already learned plenty, and you're going to learn even more. Give us a call with your questions at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Right now, we're finding out about a very successful organic micro farm and what we can all learn from it. Our guest, Jean-Martin Fortier, a farmer, a writer, educator, specializing in organic and biologically intensive cropping practices, and a fascinating book titled The Market Gardener. Great to have him along. And again, join in with your questions and comments. All our lines are filled. So let's go to the phones here. Rick and McQuantigo, thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks a lot. The question I've got is, the gentleman mentioned that he's got $150,000 in gross sales at a 45% margin. And I'm wondering if in the book, if he goes into detail about the finances from beginning to end, from starting this thing until the final result where he's at right now. That's the first question. And then the second one is, when he raises the beds, is he using a chemically treated wood, or is there some other material that he uses for the raised beds? And that's my questions.
Thanks. Okay.
All right.
John, what do you think? Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, well, these are great questions. And about the finances, you know, my book goes into somewhat details about our operation and how we bow. You know, There's a chart. I don't know if, Larry, if you've seen that chart that breaks out all of the vegetables on our farm and how much we gross per bed.
Yep.
And there's 180 beds, so it's all divided by crops. And our expenditures are somewhat talked about, but more in a general matter, because my message wasn't really that, you know, we're successful. My message was rather that we made it, and it's possible. Here's how we did it. So it wasn't that much about going into the numbers of things, but it was about passing along growing information. And the charts and the economics are explained in the book, but it's not a focal point. This is not like a, you know, my accountant wouldn't go crazy reading my book. You know?
But you've got pretty specific information in your tables, you know, of what your costs are for tomatoes, for example. That's probably your best crop.
This is a great question, and I've tried to be specific, not yet too much, because the whole purpose of the book was for the book to be engaging also. So if I went in too many details on certain aspects, you know, the reader would be turned off, perhaps. And so,
well,
and for raised beds, We don't put anything to surround our beds with. They're only mounted with dirt, and we did that with a shovel the first years, and now we use a rotary plow that is hooked on my BCS walking tractor. But these beds, they're raised about 4 or 5 inch, and after every 2 seasons they tend to settle down, so we need to re-raise them again.
And how do you re-raise them?
With the shovels or with the rotary plow. You know, this is a tool. If you Google rotary plow for BCS, you'll see what I mean. But it's a tool that takes the dirt from the aisle and shoots it onto the bed, so like a shovel would do.
Yeah. And does it pretty, it's pretty efficient.
Yeah, and it's efficient. And then the reason why we don't have anything, you know, surrounding the beds is, you know, most of our tools are standardized for 30-inch work. And so if you put wood there, or if you put cement or whatever you would want to put, you're just kind of like adding an extra, you know, unuseful thing on the contour of the garden, because our beds are 100 feet long. That's something to keep in mind. This is, we've taken, you know, gardening ideas, but we brought them to a commercial scale.
Ben in Door County has a question. Hi, Ben. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having the show. I'm actually in the process of planning my first season. We're growing lettuce for restaurants up here in Door County, and I am wondering, my two questions, and I'll try not to monopolize your time. My first question is, have you used cover crops at all to reduce turnover times on lettuce beds? And also, are there any varieties of lettuce that stand out to you as early or late performers that you would recommend?
Okay, what do you...
Yeah, these are great questions again. About lettuces, there's a lot of them that I really like, and mostly I refer to seed catalogs. And one of my favorite seed catalog is the one from High Mowing. They're in Vermont, and all of their seeds are organic. And so I really like their offer there. And a couple of them that I get from France, from Beaumont, which is another seed company that is really remarkable. And if people want to check that out, Beaumont, on Google, online, you can see all these variety of crazy old lettuces. And I would mostly recommend seed suppliers instead of specific seeds, because I think it's just looking at the catalogs that you get a general idea of how good the seeds are.
And the French company is spelled, is it Vaumont?
Yes, exactly.
Ah, okay, there we go. Ben, thank you very much for calling. I appreciate your call. And Barbara in Madison, it's your turn. Hi, Barbara.
Yes, hello. Thank you for taking my call. I'm very interested in this book. I'm going to have to go out and buy it today, because we are hoping to retire to like have a 5-acre farm and grow fruit trees and things like that. So, but one of the things I wanted to bring up was the Japanese beetles that were so prevalent a few years ago. And I went out and purchased one of, it's a yellow and green, looks like a bomb, basically, and it only holds about 2 cups, and the beetles fly into that because they use a hormone to bring them to the bomb, and they all go in there and they don't come out, so they don't reproduce, and people would say, oh, you're just going to have a yard full of beetles. And the year before I purchased this, all my flowers were gone. My cherry trees were all eaten up, all the leaves. And after I bought this, my yard was free of beetles. I would empty that every day almost, and have about 2 cups of them in there.
Oh. You ever used anything like that, Jean-Martin?
Yeah, I know these beetles. They're quite nasty, and wow, they're present and prolific. And these lures and traps. These are pheromones, so they, you know, the insect get attracted to the scent of that, and then they fall into these traps. This is, you know, what you have in your garden, Barbara, is really the future of organic farming, which is, you know, luring and trapping these insects instead of putting, you know, nasty chemicals on everywhere. We're just trying to attract them and deal with them that way. And, you know, most of these pheromones are coming out now for different bugs, cucumber beetles, and it's, you know, I think for home gardeners, what's exciting is that if they can follow up to what commercial small-scale diversified growers are doing, they'll get a lot of tricks from, you know, professionals, and that's certainly a good one. And I will also tell you, Barbara, if you're interested in buying the book, The Market Gardener, you should get it online at themarketgardener.com, because you'll buy it from me directly, and it supports my work.
Huh? Oh,
wonderful.
All right.
And we have a link on our Facebook page as well to themarketgardener.com. And so Barbara, appreciate your call very much, and I want to give others, boy, lots of interest here, Jean-Martin. Eric in Eau Claire has a question for you. Hi.
How are you?
Great. Appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
Well, I just wanted to tell a little story real quickly. I had a garden one time in my life. I was living in an apartment complex, and in front of my window, there was a bare spot of ground with just some dirt and some weeds and a little bit of grass growing in there. So I went and I got some vegetables and I planted them. And within a month, I had this beautiful, colorful, sort of vibrant garden growing right in front of my front door. And I was getting a lot of interest from other people that lived in the apartment complex. And wouldn't you know, within about a month, at the direction of management, the landscaping crew came along and wiped the garden out.
Nah.
But what I guess the larger point I want to make is, it seems with technology becoming what it is, that people with solar panels and all the advances we've made in growing knowledge and so on with horticulture and the rest of it, it seems as if Americans are moving a little bit toward becoming sustainable. And I just want to ask your guest if he would talk a little bit about, could he imagine a time in the very near future where Americans, where America becomes a place where people don't necessarily have jobs and import their goods and services halfway across the country or from around the world, where they just create them in their own yards and so on, and could he talk a little bit about that larger point? Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm. What do you think? That's a big question.
Yeah, well, you know what, Eric? You should know that this is not my specialty at all, because I'm not a macro guy. I'm like a micro guy. But I still have an opinion. I don't know how educated it is on that. But I think you're right on the money with the fact that people in America and Canada will go back to growing crops for them and for their community, because a lot of these jobs are offshore, overseas. And I can't see how this is not going to continue with China and Asia and all of these guys taking more and more space. And I think that's a good news, because when people are outside growing, you know, it's creative and it's healthy for them. And the other thing is that I think that in America, people are not stupid, and they're understanding that the food system is not only broken, it's making them sick. And if you want to be, you know, feeding yourself, which is at core of human health, with natural, healthy produce, you can't rely on industry to do that. You need to rely on somebody you respect and know, and ideally you'd meet every week at the farmer's market. And that's where this whole family farmer relationship is so profound and important. And, you know, I have a strong belief in this idea of replacing mass production by production by the masses. And, you know, right or wrong, I think that's where we're heading.
Thanks again for that call. And Paul in Malone, Wisconsin, we appreciate your call. What's on your mind?
Hi, Larry. I'd like to thank you and thank Jean-Martin very much for having this program. My wife and I have actually a market garden in Malone, Wisconsin, Shared Seasons Community Farm. And it's been great to start at, you know, kind of low capital, start small scale. But we're debating whether we want to kind of stay that way and intensify or scale up. And I guess, you know, our situation's a little different. My wife is, she's involved, but she's only kind of partially and probably less so in the future. And, you know, our customer base in the area is not a super wealthy area. So if I could just have Jean-Martin kind of talk to that aspect of how important he thinks, you know, financially and to the success of his business, it is to have that full dedicated partner and kind of what his customer base is like and, you know, if he can, how important that is to his income.
Okay, good questions. Again, Jean-Martin, what have you got to say for yourself?
Well, Paul, you know, I wish I was beside you and I could just hand you a copy of my book, because The Market Gardener is written for people like you who are perhaps doing it or thinking about doing it, or, you know, in the process of really hands-on, and they're wondering, should I scale up? What should I do? What's the next step? And what I'm proposing is to stay small and to grow better instead of growing bigger. And, you know, if you want, we can talk with Larry and exchange emails. But, you know, I'd be so happy if you would take the opportunity to read my book and to just call me or write to me about what you thought about it and how this is impacting your decision making, because I know where you're at. I know that critical point, because we've been there before, and we made the move to optimize instead of growing bigger and investing, and it's paid off for us big time. And so that's my answer to you.
Yeah. And Paul, if you want to stay,
yeah, I would.
I'm sorry. Oh. Go ahead.
Yeah. I really appreciate the chance to talk to you and, you know, in person, John. So thank you for that offer.
And if you want to stay online, Judith will get some information from you. Paul, how's that?
That's great. Thank you, Larry.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for calling. And also, if you are interested in communicating with Jean Martin, you can do so. If you go to our Facebook page, the Larry Mueller Show. We've got links there to his sites, and pretty easy to be able to, I think, shoot him an email or get online to his website. And you'll be able to visit with him in one way or another. I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about some of your philosophy in terms of how you sell your products, how you sell your vegetables. I mean, you look at different ways, and then there are different, you use different avenues to sell, a few, and then you also have some ideas about how to present your vegetables and things of that nature.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, that other caller, Paul, before, he was asking about the client base, and really, when you're market gardening, I think the big difference with market farming is that the scale gets to be smaller. And what we've been up to is creating a relationship. We sell at farmers market. We go to two of them, one on Saturday morning, one on Thursdays. But also we have a CSA, which is like community supported agriculture. And that's a direct relationship between growers and eaters. And they support one another. You know, the eaters, they provide us with, you know, cash up front for the season, and in exchange we give them a lot for their money. And so that's been huge on my farm, but in many thousands and thousands and thousands of farms all across America.
Right, we have a lot of CSAs in Wisconsin.
Yeah, Wisconsin is so beautiful and so productive, and people are into local. But for us, it has been about, you know, not having too many clients so that we can really have this relationship with them. And our economics are based around 200, 250 clients, which, you know, after 5 or 6 years of providing, you know, super healthy, super fresh and top quality produce is really not hard to find. And we're not selling at prices that are jacked, you know. The prices, if people look up at the price at market we sell at, these are low price, but it's a fair price, and it's not about you know, having high fees for your produce. It's just about providing high quality and getting the middleman out of the picture, which is really where you make money selling produce.
Well, yeah, you use an example. I forget the exact example, but by the time, If you're going through middlemen, I mean, they're taking, what, 60% or something in the end?
Yeah, you know, a lettuce that is produced at 40 cents or 50 cents for the grower is sold like $2.50 at the supermarket. And so, you know, there's a big loss because you're handing your business over to somebody that is, you know, distributing and selling it for you. And you know, we should reverse that trend, yeah, where we multiply the number of stores and we create relationships when you go in these stores, or farmers markets, and the growers, they have, you know, a better price for what they do, so they don't need to produce as much volume, because, you know, if I'm making four times as much on the same lettuce head because I'm selling it directly at $2, well, I don't need to be producing, you know, on 4 acres or on 40 acres because I'm producing, you know, it's the same amount of money in the end.
Roger in South Range, it's your turn. Hi, Roger.
Sure. Well, thank you, Larry. I was saying I lived in West Loose. I had a little spot, a 5x5 outside of a back door, and I put up, you know, livestock panels, half of them, and they're about 7.5 feet tall. I did that. I put it around two sides, the other two sides against the house. I did it because the kids played ball there, and the ball went in the garden for the first year, so I figured I needed protection. But I planted onions there, and then as we pulled the green onions up, planted lettuce. I planted beans that grew up tall. I had tomato plants around in certain places, and they did really well. And I had two or three Jerusalem artichokes. You know them, or sunchokes. You dig them up and you get these tubers in the fall and or in the spring. And we enjoyed that little garden of 25 square feet. And in the summertime, we had all the salad we needed for meals, and we had green onions in the spring and throughout the summer. And so I just say, you know, you're talking about small spots and what you can do with them. And, you know, people can, even in an apartment, you can do something with a small spot outside your house.
Well, you're not going to disagree with that, Jean Martin.
No, and you know, it comes down to the... Well, I'm talking. I've said these words on your show. I'm talking about growing professionally and being productive. But that's really when you want to make a living at this. But you know, growing food doesn't take a rocket scientist. You know, you have earth and you take care of that earth, and then you have seeds and you put them in the ground and you take care of that and it grows, and it's fairly simple. And and it's creative, and it's important. And I think, you know, the gardening world has changed a lot the last 20 years, and I think that trend is going to continue because, yeah, we need to have other activities that than watching computer screens.
Talking today with Jean-Martin Fortier, and people have been asking, how is his name spelled? And to look at it in one way, you can say his first name is actually spelled Jean, as in J-E-A-N, and then a hyphen, and Martin, although the pronunciation is Jean-Martin, so it's Jean hyphen Martin, if you want to look at it that way. Last name is spelled, his last name Fortier is spelled Fort, F-O-R-T-I-E-R. F-O-R-T-I-E-R. So if you would like to get online and type his name in, again, it's J-E-A-N hyphen M-A-R-T-I-N, and last name spelled F-O-R-T-I-E-R. And me, I'm Larry Mueller, and you're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. So happy to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here, talking today with Jean-Martin Fortier about market gardening. His book is titled The Market Gardener, A Successful Grower's Handbook for Small-Scale Organic Farming. And it's a fascinating book, and I think it's a very helpful book to anyone who might be interested in starting market gardening, or who are already in it, or who are maybe just getting started. Even people who have been in it for a long, long time are going to benefit from this book. And I think as myself, I can tell you right now, I won't be getting into it. I've got my own job to do. But as a gardener, I just enjoyed reading it and picked up a lot. As someone who just gardens at home, I picked up a lot of information that I found very useful. So I think pretty much anybody is going to enjoy a copy of this book, The Market Gardener, Jean-Martin Fortier, our guest. You can join in if you have a question or comment. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@WPR.org, or you can post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Again, we'd love to hear from you. And Jean Martin, you mentioned earlier, but it bears mentioning again, people can order right from your site, correct?
Yeah, they can order the book from my site. They can also look at all the tools that I'm using, and there's also, you know, people perhaps don't. I often forget that, but some people don't know what a walking tractor is or a two-wheel tractor is, and I would recommend that they look up this company online. It's called Ert Tools, erttools.com. And they could see what a BCS, Italian-made walking tractor, looks like and all of the implements that you can put behind it or with it, because these are not like rotor tillers that are multifaceted. You can really change the implements. So you can have like one engine and have like six different tools hook up on it. And it's really interesting because these tractors, two-wheel tractors, they're really tailor-made for small-scale organic farming.
Yeah, they really they look pretty cool as well, I can tell you that. And I liked looking at the other tools, and now suddenly I drew a blank on what I was going to bring up with you here. But you've got some ingenious. There are some ingenious tools out there, and you irrigate too, do you not?
Yeah, we make sure that all of our crops get an inch of water every week. That's a given.
And I want to skip back just a second before we go any further, because one of the things I thought was really cool was when you're seeding, to speed up when you're seeding flats, you use a homemade vacuum seeder, which I thought was really cool.
Well, there's so many of them. The vacuum seeder for seedlings is... This is one example of when we incorporated that in our system, it just changed our life, because instead of taking, you know, 1 hour to do the job, and then it would take us 7 minutes. And, you know, there's green harvesters, there's, you know, hoes that are really really well designed, you know, battery powered, a drill powered, you know, little cultivator. There's all sorts of tools like wheel hoes, electric wheel hoes, all these tools that we use, and they're all made professionally for heavy usage. And again, these walking tractors, I talked about that site, Ert Tools. It's actually erttoolsbcs.com. And when people go and visit these sites, it'll open up a whole other dimension to what farming could be like, because these are tools that we're not used to seeing.
Yeah, even the flame weeder, for me, I thought, I didn't realize they were set up that way, to be perfectly honest. I envisioned running around with a little blowtorch, which people do. But this flame weeder takes care of a wide swath at once and looks like a pretty, pretty cool piece of equipment.
Yeah, if I'm not wrong, I might be wrong on this, but I think my flame weeder is made in Wisconsin.
It could well be. We'll have Judith will probably look that up before the end of the show, if I know her, we'll find out. Eleanor in Wausau has a comment or question. Eleanor, hi, thank you for calling.
Well, thank you. My question is, do you vary the soil composition from bed to bed or rotate crops? And that's it. Thank you.
All right.
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, that's one of the main reasons why you would want to have a diversified operation. And we have a 10-year rotation, crop rotation on the farm. Mm-hmm. And it's a fairly complex rotation that was incorporated in the design of the farm, so that we took a lot of time the first year to really figure that out. And then we made it into something that is really simple to follow. And so that's answering your first question. And your second question... Well, we don't move these beds around. They're permanent. And the whole idea is to have these beds permanent so that you can create soil structures that are really deep and create soil that is fertile and very productive. So this idea of permanence is important into the overall aspect of what we do on the farm.
And your organic, and you fertilize, use organic fertilizing.
Well, we use compost. Compost
yeah.
is like at core of our system. But we not just use compost. We use high quality compost, and we even buy our compost because on the farm we don't have a tractor with a loader, and we don't have enough, you know, manure or raw material to really make. We spread about 80 tons per acre of compost, which is a lot of compost.
What?
So ever since we started the farm, we're buying compost from these compost geeks, and they were making the best stuff you could imagine. They were measuring temperatures, turning the piles at the right time, and just providing us with super healthy and vibrant compost. And we've built up our soils like that. When we started the farm, our organic matter content were around 3%, and now they're up to 13%.
Wow.
So we've intensified the production, but we've done so in partnership with the soil, which is really, I think, key here if we're going to be sustainable anyway.
Eleanor, thank you for calling. Dan in Menominee, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I had a couple things I wanted to point out. I found your book, The Market Gardener, very, very interesting. I actually noticed it a couple weeks ago. And so I read through it, and then I saw that this you were actually speaking with the author, which is great. A couple things that I noticed that I wanted to really point out is that Mr. Fortier really, a lot of his equipment and the amount of money just going into the farm there is only, if I remember the number right, it's about $35,000 of equipment and tools. And I'm going to guess that you probably didn't have all that equipment when you started.
No,
you
we
gradually bought it.
You're right.
Year after year and added to the arsenal.
Yeah, it was the startup for all the equipment, including greenhouses, hoop houses, like furnaces. It came to around 40 grand. And we didn't buy that up front. But when we bought the new farm, We took a loan because I had enough experience back then to see how these tools, they make my work so much more efficient that it was an investment to acquire them, even though I didn't have the money up front. So we had a loan, and we didn't have any credit back then, so it was like a 5-year loan at 10%, which is really awful. I'm still resentful of that banker, but that was about $8,000 a year payback money, and really it wasn't, $8,000 was nothing compared to how much we were grossing on the farm. So it was a smart move to get these tools, you know, earlier on in our career.
The other thing that, before I get to my actual question is, reading that book, it really made me feel that this project is not just for the person that wants to be a farmer. You know, we continually get told that there's high unemployment rates, there's high amounts of debt that everybody's having. Looking at myself, I know that if I did not hunt in Wisconsin and did not garden, we would not be surviving. I know we probably save between $5,000 and $7,000 a year because we own a freezer, and I know how to preserve all my foods. My actual question for you is, if you do not have a CSA around in your area, how do you get the amount of customers started? You know, I understand in the following years, they, by word of mouth, you get told about, but how do you get it right in the beginning?
Yeah, well, you knock on doors.
Ah.
And, you know, you go talk to your neighbors, you go talk to your community, you go talk to people at the library, and you tell them about your project, that you want to grow food sustainably, and you want to become a good grower, and you want to provide them with healthy produce. And you know what? Republicans, Democrats, you know, Christians, you know, Muslims, whatever, you'll get their support because this is fundamental stuff, and this is about community. And everybody in America understands that, And so, you know what? It's not everybody that is as in tune to the importance of eating local. And, you know, Walmart is still, you know, big in the importance of people wanting to pay less. But that's not the only bottom line for people. Even family that don't have, you know, high incomes, they want to eat healthy foods too. And that's why we need to cut out the middlemen in many regards. If you go at Whole Foods, food is expensive because Whole Food is an expensive money-making machine.
Yeah, and you know what? We'll continue with this along this line of conversation. We need to take a quick look at the news, and then we'll be back with our guests. Stay with us. Sometimes it may seem like gardening and farming are two different things entirely, but when you talk about a very profitable 1.5-acre micro farm, the distinction I don't think is nearly as clear cut. Larry Mueller here. Welcome to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Visiting today with Jean-Martin Fortier, a farmer, writer, educator, specializes in organic and biologically intensive cropping practices, very passionate about demonstrating how small farms can play a huge role in rebuilding our food system. He's the author of The Market Gardener, a successful grower's handbook for small-scale organic farming. And Jean-Martin, thank you again for spending time with us today. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. We're having fun.
Yeah, it's great fun. You know, someone called and had asked about how do you get started in this with a CSA, and you talked about literally going door to door to get started and visiting with people in your community.
Yeah, like finding 30 people to support the project is not that much. You know, not that many people. And if we think of it that way, those first 30 could be 50 the next year, and then, you know, from word to mouth, you'll go to 70 and 80, and soon enough, you'll be feeding 200 families, which is really not a lot if you think about it. 200 families, and you know, your garden, even if you're in the suburb or perhaps even in the city, could be providing food for your neighborhood.
And you can on 1.5 acres provide for a couple hundred families, right?
Yeah, we provide for about 250 families.
And in addition, you sell at farmers markets.
Yeah, well, I count my clients at the farmers market as families.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, it's pretty much the same people all over the all the same time. And we also bring a couple of produce that we grow a bit more of. We do mesclun, which is like the French word for salad mix. It is mm-hmm. really special salad mix that we bring at our local grocery store, and we bring tomatoes there too. And it's just people, it's so positive. People appreciate that. People are happy to eat local. And the fact that the economics work for us is really the game changer, because we can do this and feel happy and proud about it, but we can also think that, you know, our kids are going to university and we'll have retirement money and we'll make it happen. And mm-hmm. I think that's the important aspect about this.
And do you ever sell to restaurants?
We also sell to a couple of restaurants, but these are not the high-end restaurants that are willing to pay. These are like the local restaurants that are kind of tired of buying the salad mix that comes from California that is like rotten in the bag when they get it. And so they prefer ours that is like totally fresh and it'll last like 7 days for them. And so we cater to these guys too. And it's just like a 60-mile radius. We're food producers for different people.
Judy in Elk Mound has a question. Hi, Judy. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm calling about a piece of land up on a hill that would maybe like to start gardening, but wondering, there's no structures or plumbing, so how would any ideas on how to get water to a place?
Well...
Yeah.
Or a pond. These are like the pretty much the two options. You can either dig a pond and hopefully it'll fill.
either you have a liner in the bottom of the pond or clay, or even if your water table's high, it probably is going to fill by itself. And otherwise, a well is a more expensive option, but you know, you need to make the math and make a business call if it's worthwhile investment.
Yeah.
So with a pond, how big of a pond would you have to do?
Well, it depends on the scale of your project and the scope. And just to give you an idea, for our farm, we dug a hole that was about, let's say, 80 by 120, and it was about $2,000 of backhoe to make that hole. And we pump out of that, and we water, you know, on an acre and a half. But, you know, Wisconsin and Quebec is probably not the same rainfall per year, so it's kind of hard to compare that way.
Yeah, but that's the way you do it. And in the meantime, as you point out, you got yourself a nice little pond for swimming once in a while too.
Yeah, and for playing hockey in the winter.
There
you go.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Stephanie in Wayota. Hello, thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. This is a great conversation, so inspiring. So there's a couple things that came to mind. One is just, do you have this awful tomato blight where you live, Jean-Martin? Because that's really set a lot of us back on why we garden. We want tomatoes, and I don't even know if it's late or early blight. Larry knows what I'm talking about, right, Larry?
Yeah.
But the other one is, if somebody wanted to get started, a lot of us who live out in the country are surrounded by swaths of grass, and some of us mow it. Some of it's just, you know, old field. But can you talk about starting out? How do you prepare the land? And then tomato blight, if you have any advice on variety.
Tomato blight is not an easy one, and we don't have it yet. It's coming because it's migrating from the south. So, you know, I'm usually good at tackling the problems once I face them, because it kind of urges me to look for answers. So I haven't done the research yet on blight. But, you know, I'm crossing my fingers.
It's miserable.
That I live in like in a magical bubble. But I'm sure it's going to come my way. And about starting a garden, well, you know, there's different ways to go about it. It boils down to how fast you want to start to plant. And if you want it to be really fast, well, the only option is to remove the sod. And you do this either with a backhoe that comes, or, you know, these, I don't know what these machines are called, but they're lawn removing machines, and then they kind of roll up the lawn, and then you can even sell the lawn.
Yeah.
So you can use
sod cutters.
Sod cutters. And that's a fast way to do that. Otherwise, you need to, you know, incorporate your sod into the soil by using a plow with a tractor and disc it a couple of times, or, you know, a big rototiller that would, and then you would put a tarp or something to speed up the decomposition. But that's more of a 4 months project. The other solution is like a two day boom boom, and you're ready to go.
Yeah. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. Thanks, Stephanie, for calling. Appreciate it. And Katie in Menominee, it's your turn. Hi, Katie.
Hi, how are you?
Great, thanks for calling.
Well, I'm calling in kind of just to share another success story. I work for a local hospital, which also spans region-wise through Minnesota and Wisconsin, and we've adopted a program called Kids in the Garden. Fortunately, we've had a great partnership between our community garden and our career here at our hospital. But we just started a small program from basically no experience, and we purchased a plot at our community garden and sent out an invite and saw what kind of interest we had from families and kids. And we have about 10 to 15 families that take part in our program, but the kids really get hands-on with helping us cultivate the land and the plants. Obviously, they like the harvesting the best, but really think that getting our kids to eat good, fresh products is to show them how to grow it. And if they don't have a family that does it already, or if they don't have a school that's adopting a program, I think we could be a great resource to them. And like I said, I am not a garden expert. I love gardening and I'm interested in it. But we started planning to fail, and we didn't fail. And so I think getting our kids into these kinds of programs and getting them to the farmers market and talking with some of the producers and getting to know what kind of weird products are out there, and maybe they'll let them sample them and they'd be more likely to eat them in the future.
Really interesting. Katie, thank you so much for calling. Jean-Martin, comment?
This is wonderful. And, you know, as I travel around and I meet people like Katie and other people doing this kind of stuff, it just reminds me that we're part of a movement, and this movement is about nourishing our community with healthy food, and this movement is an important one, and there's a lot of players and there's a lot of actors and there's a lot of community support for this kind of action. And you know, I'm one of these people that I don't know if I'm overconfident in life or what, but I feel so positive about all of this, and I think we are changing not only the face of agriculture, but we're changing the way we're living, because we're changing the way we're caring for food. And I'm so proud and happy to be a part of that.
Yeah. Katie, thank you so much. I'm wondering how you got your own kids involved on the farm. Do they, your kids do?
I bought a program for the iPad that explains how to start up farms. No, I'm kidding, but you know what? I wish my 11-year-old would be a bit more in tune in what we're doing, but you can't force these things. Anyway, we've chosen not to force it on them, and, you know, they've eaten good food all their life, so they'll know about that, and for sure they want to eat these Oreo cookies, and they want to have Quick in their milk and whatever, but I think as they grow older, they'll understand the importance of what we're about and what we're doing.
Yeah, I've got an 11-year-old too, so I know what you're talking about.
Let's do a Minecraft about starting farms.
Oh, man. You can join in too as you listen in, by the way. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. Go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. You can post your questions or your comments there. We'd sure love to hear from you. And matter of fact, let's go to Craig in Wausau next. Craig, thanks for joining us. Hi.
Hello, thank you. I'm wondering about once you have your garden beds established, I don't know if you do the double digging or how deep, but how do you take care of them year after year? That how much cultivating and how deep do you cultivate?
Yeah, that's a fantastic question. And we don't double dig. And the reason is that we try to not haul over the soil and not turn it upside down. So we use a broad fork instead of double digging to get, you know, the depth, soil depth that we want for our root systems. And then from then, we really cultivate only the surface of the soil, the top inch, with different tools that we have on our BCS, like a power harrow that works on an inch. And instead of, you know, mixing up the layers, it just kind of mixes the compost to the top soil. And we're able to get around not rotor tilling and not disking and plowing because the beds are permanent, and also because we're using these black tarps that are smoothering out all of the debris or, you know, green manures or crop residues, so that when we remove them, the beds, you know, they're already ready to go. And so we've really been keen with this idea of replacing mechanical tillage by biological tillage and having the earthworms do the job for us. And when you want to do this, you need to think like an earthworm. And these earthworms, when you rotor till, they're not pleased with you. You know, you're taking their home and you're putting it in a blender, and then they need to redo the whole work again that they were just doing. And when you cover the soil with black plastic or with tarps or with mulch, you know, you're kind of creating this habitat for them to be you know, moving back and forth, up and down the soil, you know, structuring the soil and eating organic matter and pooping humus. So that's been our approach, and it's kind of hard to describe all of this on radio like that, but if you read the book or if you come to one of my workshops, you'll really understand our approach, which is really, if it's effective, it's ecological, and it's productive.
Thank you, Craig, for calling. And let's talk about your workshops for a minute. Where do you typically hold them?
Well, I get invited, and then if my wife lets me, I go. But I've been interested in working with a group called the National Young Farmer Coalition. And if people are listening to this and they're inspired by my message, I urge you to visit what the National Young Farmer Coalition is doing. This is a network of young farmers that are getting together to change policy in America and to make it happen for young growers. And they have branches in every state. There's probably one in Wisconsin. And usually these guys, they put up the events, and then they invite me over to come and teach and talk. And I gladly do so because, again, I'm doing all of this not because I want to be on air talking. You know, I don't really care about being the go-to guy. But what I care about is contributing to the change and being a part of what's happening the best I can. So that's really what I'm about.
Georgia in Lake Mills is with us next. Georgia, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I had a couple of things. There's something I tried, and Larry, you probably have heard of this book, the Ruth Stout No Work Garden Book.
Oh, yeah.
For turning sod into a garden. It takes patience, but you cut it real short, and then you put seed potatoes right on top of the grass, and then put enough straw mulch, and you have to build a little fence around that so it doesn't blow away. So it's dark there, and you just let the potatoes grow through the straw, and the first year you get the crop, but it kills all the grass. And you just fork off the straw when the potatoes are ready to be picked, and they're laying there on the on the surface of the dirt. And I tried it; it works.
Yeah.
And then the next year I had a garden. And the other thing is, in Door County, at least my well water, and I think just about everybody else's well water, if you sprinkle it on your garden long enough, it just kills the plants because of all the iron. And so I heard about this Irrigrow system, which is using Tyvek as a watering system, and I got myself a 300-gallon stock tank and took water off the roof of the place I was living, and then it just you run all these little Tyvek tubes, which are easy to use and cheap, and actually they come out of Canada, and they just it takes about a tenth of the amount of water, and then that way I could use rainwater to irrigate. Now you had to use a lot of straw mulch too, because there's so much sand in the soil in Door County, it dries up pretty fast.
Yeah.
Those are my comments. That Irrigrow stuff was just great.
Oh. Jean Martin, well, first, have you heard of Ruth Stout?
I've read her book many years ago, and I think she had the approach of getting the earthworms to do the job for her. She would layer, and then she would let them do the work. She was all about that. And, you know, I people can make that experiment if they want. You can cut, you know, whatever's growing, grass or, you know, on a bed, on a permanent bed that has good organic matter and earthworms, and just lay a popsicle stick on top of the soil and you know, cover it with a tarp, and then come back 2 days later, and you'll find that the popsicle stick is in the ground.
Yeah.
Because these earthworms, that's what they do. They come up, and then they take up stuff, and then they bring it down. And, you know, I'm just amazed why hasn't conventional agronomy looked at that? Like, how can we ignore, you know, the power of earthworms? Because they could really do the job for us. We can harness their power, and it's... I'm a big fan of that book, by the way. So.
And actually, I mentioned this in the past. If you go to Ruth Stout's Garden on Facebook or on YouTube, I'm sorry, you'll get that little 20-minute of her actually doing her work, which is quite fun. And what about the drip irrigation system?
Yeah, well, you know, when I learned how to farm in New Mexico, so it was pretty dry, and everything was on drip and on a clock, so we would water our crops at night. And, you know, back home in Quebec, we don't have water problems per se. We have excess water that needs to drain, especially in the spring. So, you know, if I don't have an inch of water every week, I prefer to use sprinklers because they're faster to set up. But if I was in the climate in an area where water was an issue or it was, you know, counted upon on a regular basis, I would go drip all the way because this is the most efficient usage of water. The thing is that sometimes you need to balance efficiency in watering and efficiency in setting up the water system. And so since we're doing a lot of things on the farm, sometimes you need to think about that.
Mm. Georgia, thank you again for calling. Appreciate your call. You know, we had Chris, we're kind of running out of time here, but brand new gardener, just getting started, kind of inspired by what you've been talking about today. What advice have you got for the beginning gardener?
Well, it's a pretty blunt advice, and I hope your listeners won't feel that I'm pushing this a bit too far, but you know what? I really recommend that you read The Market Gardener, because I think that this is a book that was written for people to understand everything that is involved in becoming a successful grower, all the techniques. And from there, you know, I would recommend that you spend at least one full season working on somebody else's farm. Because farming might be a dream for some people, but farming is hard work. And you need to know if you're cut out for the job. So a full season there. And then my third advice is really simple. Start your own little market garden. You know, like we talked about, finding 30 families in your community is not just a big thing, and getting the equipment and the tools that you need to get starting is not a big expense. So, you know, from there, you'll learn 50 times faster because you're working on your own, and you need to make it happen for you. So that these are my three recommendations.
Well, thank you so much for being with us today. I hope we have a chance to talk again. Jean Martin, I really appreciate you being with us today.
Anytime, Larry. My line is always open for this kind of discussion.
Jean Martin Fortier, who is the author of The Market Gardener, a successful grower's handbook for small-scale organic farming. A great read. A really great read. And I would hope you'd... Well, go to our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You'll get all the links you need to his work and his book. Thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store.